Okay, I'll go ahead and get started with the boilerplate stuff while we're still waiting for people to join. Here is the agenda for today. Brief summary is that we will, Manu will talk to us about what it means now that the DID working group charter is out, what sort of outreach we need to do to help make that successful. And then we will do an educational session on agents, hubs, and more. So this is a topic that's popped up in our mailing list that many in the CCG community have not necessarily been exposed to. So the only plan there is to review different approaches because this is a topic that will be increasingly of interest in the educational community. Mixing communities, credentials community group. So let's go through the agenda. So we're going to do the IP note, call notes, the boilerplate stuff, scribe selection, be thinking about if you want to scribe. We'll do introductions and reintroductions. So if you're new to the call, prepare to speak up when we get there. Then we have announcements and reminders. We're skipping project progress and action items. Then lastly, the main topics we have Manu to present about the DID working group charter and outreach, and then I'll lead the presentation overview of agents, hubs, and more. Any modifications to the agenda before I proceed? Okay, let's get started. So for the IP note, anyone can participate in, it does sound, yes, Manu, I think you may be right, but it seems better now. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of CCG with full IPR agreements signed. Go to this location to join, and you may need to ensure you have a W-3 account, which you can do here. And the W3C community contributor license agreement is described here. I'm pasting these all in IRC. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the following location. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call, as well as to take minutes. Let's see, all attendees should type present plus, no space in between, as I'm doing right now, to ensure that you're listed as an attendee. In IRC, type Q plus, the letter Q and plus, no space, to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder. Q plus to mention DID spec needs better SEO. I'll give an example like this. The two can give you a reminder about what your topic is, which can be useful if things start to get a little meandery. If you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. And please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always queue plus again. The other thing that we're clarifying is that the meeting is held by voice, not IRC. Off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. You can always write intentionally off-record comments by doing slash, actually, I'm forgetting the command right. I think it's slash me. I don't remember. Maybe Manu can do it.
Yeah, that's right. Last one.
Okay. So we work hard to manage a single thread of conversation so everyone can participate and be heard. Please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. So now we do the scribe selection. Here is the list of candidates. Perfect. Thanks, French. And so he did that by typing slash me and then making an off-record comment. Okay, let's look at the scribe candidates. Let me try to jump through a few people. Is Benjamin Young here? Chris Weber, Dan Pape, Dan Buckner, not here yet, David Chadwick, David Lane. So again, looking for scribe volunteers. Charlotte O'Carroll, Jeff Orgel, Joe Kaplan, Kalia Young, Kulpreet Singh. Again, looking for volunteers if you want to chime in before. Let's see. Okay, Ganesh Anand. Ted Thibodeau. Mike Lauder. Nope, not here. Heather Besson, not here. Ken Ebert. Again,
present but in transit.
What's that?
I'm present, but I'm in transit and can't type.
Okay. Thank you. Lucas Parker, not here. Amy Guy. Jonathan Holt. Okay, we're getting to the they scribe way too often section. This means that we're going to have to start clamping down even more. Brent Zundel.
Yeah, I can scribe today.
Thank you. You are a frequent scriber. I think we need a rewards program or something. Okay. Here we go. Thank you very much, Brent. Okay, now we're getting to introductions and reintroductions. Are there any new participants on the call today who'd like to introduce themselves? I'm going to call some aliases I haven't seen before. Dan McG, Dan MCG, do you want to introduce yourself? Karen, I think I know which Karen this is, but do you want to introduce yourself? Let's see. Lastly, Sumita, I think you may have introduced yourself before, but just for people to hear.
Yeah. This is Sumita Jonak from USAA.
Hi, thanks for joining.
Thanks.
Okay, reintroductions, also skipping through people who do not appear to be here, but let's see, Ryan Grant, can you introduce yourself, reintroduce yourself?
Sure, I can. My name is Ryan Grant. I run a company called Digital Contract Design, and my interest is in BTCR. I've worked with the BTCR Method Group on the Bitcoin reference implementation, implementing the IDs.
Great, thank you. And that reminded me, next week we will do a BTCR hackathon report out. That hackathon happened last week. So, yeah, we had a lot of progress, and we'll be discussing that soon. Announcements and reminders. We keep the list at this location up to date. I lost my IRC screen. Sorry, one second. Here we go. Okay, we post the list of announcements there. We try to keep that up to date. We are still having some more dedicated calls on Thursdays, Marcus. Is that true?
Yes, we're continuing the calls. We're probably going to shift attention back a little bit to the DID resolutions back now that we managed to arrive at final community group report for the main DID spec. But yes, the calls will continue as usual.
Great. So I put in the link to that in the time. Actually, that I meant to say that is on Thursdays at these times. 1 to 2:30 Pacific, 2:30 Pacific, yeah, and yes, that's on Thursdays. On September 1st, there is a Vienna Digital Identity Meetup that's right before rebooting Web of Trust 9 that will be in Prague. Information about that event, registering, et cetera, is at this location. And after there will be a lot of people who will attend rebooting there, so we will take the train afterwards to Prague. It'll be a good chance to get some early discussions and work done. Then we have rebooting Web of Trust 9 in Prague. That is September 3rd through 6th. Here is the Web of Trust site, and you can register for that at this location. Afterwards, if you're still hanging around, an activity pub face-to-face is happening in Prague. That's September 7th through 8th, and you can find information about it here. TPAC 2019 will be September 16th through 20th in Fukuoka, Japan. And then lastly, My Data 2019 will be the 25th through the 27th of September in Helsinki. Information about that is here. And it will have a DID workshop. Joe, you are on the queue. Joe, are you muted?
Thanks. Sorry about the mute. So two things. The deadline for getting a discount on rebooting is this Friday. So if you've got a paper you've been trying to finish and get out there so you can get several $100 off the ticket price, please get that into the repo by this Friday. If you get the paper in, we will give you the discount, but that's coming up this week. And then the other item I wanted to share is you mentioned the activity pubs. We should probably add this to our scratch pad. There's also a Holochain hackathon in Prague following our event. In fact, it's starting at the same venue. If I understand it, it's also going to be at Paralonini Polis. So you can check out that URL if you're interested in Holochain.
Great. Thank you, Joe. Okay, Joe, you're on the queue again, but I'm guessing, are you finished or?
Yeah, the second one was for Holochain.
Okay, cool. Let's see. Okay, so we are skipping over the progress and action items. We'll come back to that next week after we've had a chance to review some more things. So we can start getting into the main topics. The first one I'm going to call on Manu to talk about now that the DID working group charter is available, being distributed, what sort of outreach we should be doing to help promote that and ensure the success. Manu, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so the DID working group charter is out for review and it's public now. So here is a link to the public announcement. It links to the DID working group charter. Anyone can provide comments. So this is an announcement to the general public, and it's a request for feedback on the DID working group charter from the general public. If you are not a W3C member company, but you would like to support the work, respond to that email, that specific email, saying that you think that DIDs are fantastic and you want to see the work progress and so on and so forth. There, even if you're an individual, it's useful. Frankly, you know, W3C is a kind of a corporation university thing. So they want organizations that are basically going to say, yeah, we're not W3C members, but we're this giant multi-billion dollar multinational that wants to see this work progress. That is the best type of response if you're not a W3C member. And then everything else is kind of below that, right? If you're a small company, it's interesting, important, but they don't pay as much attention to that. And if you're an individual, they find it useful, but it doesn't really weigh one way or the other. So everyone on this call, hopefully, that wants to see the DID stuff happen should respond to that and say that they're supportive. The more descriptive about why you're supportive, the better. Please abstain from making any kind of anti-anything statements. So, for example, anti-government, anti-bank, anti-corporation, anti-collective. Just make it positive. That's the best thing you can do. Okay, so that's the general public. And you should, if you know other people that want to see this stuff happen, have them send in comments as well. Everyone should be reaching out to their networks and asking them to respond. The other thing that's really important, and I'm going to put another link in here, is the actual vote for the DID working group at W3C. That is a link. Only W3C members can get access to that link, and it's really only W3C Advisory Committee folks. Those are the people that are able to put a vote into W3C. So these are W3C members and specifically people that have the authority to vote on behalf of their organization. We are looking for, I believe, what's the low watermark here? So we've got 430 members. I believe we're looking for 22 members to vote positively out of 430. It's a pretty low bar, but we're hoping to get much more than that. We're hoping to get 40 to 50 members. So if you are a W3C member, now is absolutely the time to go in and register your vote. Don't wait. The voting is only open until the end of this month, so we're halfway through. We've basically got 2 weeks to drum up support for the group. Yeah, I can't tell you how the vote's going right now because that's W3C member confidential, but we really do need many more people voting. I am personally going to send out a lot of requests to AC members. I can do that as another AC member. So if you know AC members, have them reach out to other W3C AC members to get them to click the vote button and support the work. Okay, that's it. I think that covered it. Kim, did I miss anything? Joe, Christopher?
Not that I know of, but I do have a question for you. I put myself on the queue. I'll go ahead. So I'm no longer a W3C member, so I had a question sort of about ways, what sort of support W3C might be looking for kind of independent of large companies. So with the digital credentials initiative that, multi-university consortium that's looking into, using DIDs as part of the solution, but may not be W3C members for whatever reason. Is that of any value basically to
absolutely.
W3C leadership? Okay.
Yeah, it is absolutely a value. The larger the organization, even if they're not members, they will listen. And frankly, they're listening because those are potential new members. So if the W3C is doing work that big companies find useful, it's a hint to W3C that, hey, maybe if we keep doing this stuff, these big multi-billion dollar organizations are going to join and provide member dues. And most importantly, ensure the success of the technology that we're working on.
But just to be clear, even if they're not necessarily a company, like if they're an organization, you know, nonprofit or something,
that's
is
fine.
That okay?
That's yep. And they specifically this link there, that email, that's the one that they should respond to. So there's a button at the bottom that if you click, it's mail actions, respond to this message. If you click that, it'll pop up your mail application. It'll fill out the headers appropriately, and you will do a direct response to that message. So share that with them, and let me see if I can. Yeah, I can't share the link because it's massive. But yeah, look down at the bottom of that link. There's a respond to this message. Tell them to click it and say that they're very supportive of it.
Excellent. Thank you. I'll do that. Joey, you're next. Joe, are you muted?
Yes, sorry. I just want to follow up about what's the next step for us with regard to the DID spec, which is not the charter, but I believe there's a milestone, and Marcus went through the work to publish a final draft. So what do the chairs need to do to support that?
Amanda, you're up.
Yeah, I didn't. Kim, I don't know if you had it for a different part of the agenda today, or do you want to cover that now?
Now would be great, actually.
Okay. Marcus did a fantastic job of creating a community group final report. That is there. That's the frozen version. At this point, the chairs have to call for, basically say, is the community group okay with handing this over to the DID working group? So fundamentally, that's what we're trying to find out. The way the chairs want to do that, I think Christopher already sent an email out to that effect saying, are there any objections to making this a community group final report? If there are no objections, and you probably just want to let that hang out there for maybe 7 days or so, if there are no objections, then it carries, and you take that link, that CGFR 2019-810 link, and there is a button that, if you are a chair, should show up to you on this page. So chairs should use the button on this page. I think it might be on the left. They move it every now and then. But it might be under the final reports thing halfway down the page on, publish a new final report. Actually, why don't you all check that on the call right
yep.
now? Do you see it? You can see it?
Yep, there's a DIDS data model and syntaxes.
Wait a second. No, hold on. Wrong link, Joe, I think. It's the community credentials link that I just put in.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. And there's drafts, licensing info, and it lists data model and syntaxes.
Yes, but that's a draft. There it is, publish report. Never mind, it's showing up for me too. There's a publish report button. Let me see if I can try and... I don't think I have the power to do it. Anyway, I think only the chairs have the power to do that, to publish a report, but you publish it as an FCGS, and then at that point, it will give you a link it says I'm not authorized. So here's the link. So Kim, Joe, or Christopher, you need to use that link, and then it will probably say, do you want to publish an FCGS? You put the URL that Marcus provided, the CGFR link that Marcus provided, and then that will put it out there. But you only do that after the 7-day vote. So just to recap, chairs call for any objections to publish this and hand it over to the DID working group as a community group final report. You click the button to publish it as a community group final report, and then you request that as many people as possible in the community group go in and make the IPR commitment And so we, at that point, need to be very pushy with people that have contributed decent chunks of content to the DID spec, so that we get them on the record saying that they're not going to assert any kind of patents on the text in the DID spec. And that's it. Once that's done, that enables the DID working group to pick it up and take it forward.
Okay, a few questions. So I click through that. Do we need to publish a first draft, or we just go to final report?
I think we can go straight to final report.
Okay. It does say final reports must be copied to the W3C website using W3.org domain name, which means I think we need some help from staff.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I'm trying to see if, let me check to see what happened with the...
There is a helpful link on how to publish a report, so I can read
great.
That and follow up. So thank you. That was exactly the direction I was looking for.
Great. Thank you. And Dan Burnett is next on the queue.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to add one other thing to what Mani said, just to explain a little bit for people. If someone made a contribution and then they do not agree, essentially the final specification agreement, which is saying that they agree to, then what it means, it doesn't mean that the working group could not use the document. It does mean that the working group might need to decide to remove anything that was contributed, where the person didn't make this final agreement that Monty is talking about. So that's always a hassle for the group at best, and at worst, it could actually prevent the success of the specification. So this is why it's very important for anyone who has actually made a contribution to the specification to, once the document is out, to say, yes, I agree to the licensing term.
Thanks, Dan. Marcus, you're up next.
I just wanted to say, and Manu, correct me if I'm wrong, but people can continue to raise issues and pull requests to the spec, and those that are still there, they won't be thrown away, but all of that will be carried over to the working group. So if people find something in the current version that's maybe can be improved or that can still missing, then it doesn't mean we need to object to this final report, but we can continue to track improvements and additions as always.
That is correct.
Yeah, thanks for that. Manu, you're up.
So the people that we really need to chase down are these people, the people that put in pull requests. So myself, Amy, Marcus, Dave Lane, Longley, Daniel Hardman, Matt Collier, Kim. It's just those people. And then if we really want to be thorough, we would pull every single person that raised an issue that has been closed and try to get them as well. And that should, it's overkill for what we're doing, but that will help us feel good about the IPR commitments, moving them over.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, so I want to just reiterate that Christopher sent out the email already announcing the availability of the DID working group charter for public viewing and review. Please, everyone, review it. We're calling for any objections among the community group. I don't know exactly when Christopher did that, but we're probably in under a 7-day review period. I think it was maybe 2 days ago, so let's say like 5-day reviews at this point. If no objections filed by then it's accepted by the community group. Okay, so no one else on the queue. Thanks, everyone, for contributing to that discussion. And now I think we're able to move on to the main topic. So this is the Agents, Hubs, and More discussion. And Brent, one thing I was thinking, you probably don't need to scribe because of the content will be in the presentation, which is linked to in the minutes. So, you can use your own discretion there. I sent out this link and PowerPoint and PDF versions just now, just in case for whatever reason you don't want to get it from the online site. But yeah, I'm going to be working from this. So yes, this is called Agent Hubs and Secure Data Hubs. So we had a few discussions in the mailing list that referred to these things. This is a topic that's been happening a lot in combination, rebooting Web of Trust, IIW, and definitely the Centralized Identity Foundation. Oh, and ARIES as well. But we haven't discussed it much in CCG. So we were debating a bit how to introduce people to these concepts. We decided the way not to do that was just to do standalone presentations of each. We wanted to give people context and have more of an informational session before we have the experts actually chime in. So, thanks to everyone who are experts in these for helping me pull this together, and please add yourself to the queue if I mess up anything. So I am on page 2. So about this presentation. Okay, there are 3 proposed self-sovereign approaches that are solving some set of these types of problems that we view as kind of some of the problems right beyond DID specification. So those include self-sovereign data or credential storage, key management, and credential exchange protocols. The approaches that we've seen referenced so far, in which this presentation will focus on, are ARIES agents, Decentralized Identity Foundation Identity Hubs, and Digital Bazaar's latest proposal, Secure Data Hubs. So Manu sent that out on the mailing list about a month ago. We'll also briefly mention other technologies in this space, like solid pods and IPFS, but we won't go deeply into them, although they are interesting just to keep in mind as possible elements of a solution. Okay, so yes, again, so I'm moving to slide 3. Again, I'm attempting a neutral overview, and how is that possible? So I have no skin in the game with any approach. I like, dislike aspects of all of them. I wanted to learn more because I'll be needing to use these types of technologies in some projects I'm working on. So I wanted to understand, and I figured, it might be useful to folks more broadly. So the goal of this is only to get us up to speed in these different approaches to critical after-DID problems. And I expect this to be a foundation for subsequent discussions to get us so that we're more on a even playing field when we discuss throughout SSI communities. We want to make sure that these all work together, so we want to help set the foundation for interoperability, and so getting everyone more informed and able to analyze the approaches is a key part of that. Experts in each of these have been invited to give feedback, and they have done so beforehand very generously on the slide deck, but then also they're invited during this presentation to provide clarifications and answers to Q&A. I think that, we've discussed also the idea, if those parties are interested, having follow-up discussions where they're able to present it in a more deep dive kind of format. So, but again, we won't be able to get too deeply into any one in this. So flow, I'm on slide 4. We'll start a high-level context of, what problems are they trying to solve? So we get sort of a visual overview. We'll move into a brief introduction to each. Q&A and discussion, and I've called out a few discussion points that in preparing for this meeting, some people have called out. Lastly, I have resources that I relied on for further reading. I'm hoping that, again, since this is just a brief overview, I also wanted to make the resources available so people can continue looking into that on their own. And clearly this conversation will continue throughout the identity communities. Slide 5. Okay, so we're starting first with the high-level context. So first I wanted to call out ARIES agents and DIF identity hub. what those are. And so Diff Identity Hubs are the brief summary of that is services that help an identity manager, identity owner manage data and interact through it. The brief one-liner of Aries/sovereign agents is pieces of software that hold delegated keys, exchange digital credentials, and otherwise do an identity owner's bidding. So the great thing that's happened so far at the last IAW, work has already been done to align these approaches. So that work enabled me to make better sense out of this and also figure out how Secure Data Hub might fit in as well as some other pieces. So that work was led by Daniel Hardeman, Daniel Buckner, and Sam Curran. So the output is in a Medium post that I will link to here. This one's a really good starting point, and they also have references to, you know, deeper dives of the spec. So yeah, I was able to use this as a starting point, and the next slide is pretty much taken from that presentation. So slide 7, focus on that Venn diagram. So we have one, hubs on the one side, agents on the other side. You know, hubs focus on storage, replication, collections, agents, wallets, key management, protocols. We'll come back to some of this terminology. But on the left side is sort of a brief contrast. So hubs are data oriented. The focus is on data management, but does not take actions on a user's behalf. That is the focus of Aries agents. So they're more flow oriented. They do take actions on the owner's behalf. There's a good list of protocols that are here. Actually, I thought I meant to link to the base Aries RFCs, but yeah, the protocols are listed here, and there's some interesting Aries agents, Aries RFCs all around there. So I want to come back to that little call out that I put, that call out box. This is later discussion, storage, protocols, wallets. Some of the ambiguity with kind of coming up with a structure for how these all fit together, what responsibilities they have, is some ambiguity in the language that we use. You know, what exactly do we mean by wallet? Is it, you know, is it doing things like storage? Is it, you know, all of those kinds of things? And these are obvious questions, but I think that post did work. We're going to have to revisit efforts started at DIF around the self-sovereign identity stack, trying to kind of figure out what are the critical pieces, what responsibilities. So that'll be effort throughout these identity communities. On slide 8, so now I've dropped in secure data hubs and moved things around. So what changes did I make? Okay, so first, previously in the intersection of identity hubs, Aries agents, actions was in that overlap. I moved actions up. That's part of all of them. But actions, that's a pretty generic term. What do we mean by that? You know, these are things that we can discuss. Storage is also, so that's in the intersection between secure data hubs and identity hubs. They're both trying to solve that problem. Let's see. I threw in some other just sort of things that I thought were kind of interesting. Secure data hubs, you know, storage focus, but there was a big focus on streaming access to data, encrypted search indexes, which looked interesting, and I'll briefly talk about. These call out markers are not meant to sort of have anything to do with positioning within the Venn diagram. It got too complicated, but there are aspects of key management protocols and storage in both of these solutions, which is sort of interesting to factor in, and I think would be a good follow-up discussion. I'm going to check the queue real fast. Okay, yeah, Manny's on the queue.
Yeah, just a question. This is great. So I really like the additive approach to kind of describing, you know, starting small and then building up. I'm wondering if solid pods will be added to this diagram at some point in the future. Like, is there a progression here where we'd want to put solid pods in as well?
I think, you know, this was just, I'm not sure where this work goes next, but I would be interested in that, at least informally. You know, I think that as we refine what these tasks and responsibilities are, I'll be better able to kind of map that to something pretty cleanly. So solid pods do have a lot of interesting characteristics such that we can use them, you know, not fully interchangeably with DIDs, but, you know, they function as a URI that could be used in a, oh, sorry, I'm talking about profiles, sorry. So the profiles, basically those are URIs that could be used as subjects of a verifiable credential. You can do similar things like, you know, list your keys there and you know, pods are meant more for your own, you know, self-sovereign data storage. So the concepts are very similar. There's just, you know, picking apart some of these details and terminology will be critical there. But yeah, I think as we refine our effort, we'll be looking to figure out how solid maps into that, because I think that there's interesting overlap. I'm going to move to the next part, so that was just sort of the very high level visual, what sort of words, domains are they trying to solve? Now we'll get a little more into details. And this is the part where, you know, if you know a lot about the topic, feel free to chime in, add yourself to the queue. Christopher's on the queue right now.
Yeah, I just quickly wanted to add, there are a number of other parties that, you know, may want to contribute their stacks or their thoughts about their stacks and things in this category. I think IPFS and Agorix and, you know, in addition to the Solid Folk. And there was a few others that were at the D-Web camp that were kind of dealing with encrypted storage for the decentralized web. So, I think these three ones that we're talking about in the slideshow today may be just the beginning. That's it.
Great, thank you. And one thing that's helpful as well, we have a few folks, like I think Johnny Crunch has a fair amount of experience in, say, IPFS compared to many of us. A few people in the community have more solid experience, so it would be really useful to start getting more focus on that. Jonathan Holt is on the queue.
Yeah, just to ask about, you know, agents. There's Ares agents, which is actually a specific type of agent, but are there any other agents that are implementing various other agent protocols?
I can give a sort of naive answer, which is that I've only encountered that in the informal sense. I am not aware of any specific proposal, but add yourself to the queue if you have an answer to that. Adrian, you're up.
Just a quick comment that in this kind of overview and presentation of alternatives, it would be very nice to introduce some aspects of privacy or privacy engineering that might be the same or different across the proposals as we flesh these out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Manu, you're up.
Yeah, agents is such a broad thing that a lot of things could probably fall underneath. Like, for example, I don't know if the credential handler API is viewed as a subtype of agent. Like, it definitely helps you move data from point A to point B, and it acts on your behalf, but it's meant to be this, like, polyfill piece of code. So is it a fully autonomous agent? No, absolutely not. It's not even a dumb agent, but it is a conduit to move for example, verifiable credentials from a digital wallet over to a verifier. So so just throwing that out there, I don't know if that classifies as an agent. The other thing I want to mention is I'm a bit concerned that we're going to run out of time to go through the slide deck, and it's super important to do that. So I don't know if we want to push past our regular time or maybe not take questions till the end.
So let's see. Yeah, what I'm inclined to do is keep the queue as is at the moment, but I'll just plow through the rest of the slide deck, because I think that that's sort of the meat of the discussion. It may help resolve some of the answers. And as soon as I get through this, I'll open it up, because we have a Q&A session where it would be good to get to more of these. So let me resume, and I will resume the queue where we left off. Okay, so on slide 10, we start with DIFF Identity Hub. So a quick overview of that. It allows secure storage and sharing of data. So a hub is a data store containing semantic data objects at well-known locations. One of the things that stood out to me that I found really interesting is they're trying to, sort of architect best practices for individuals in there by saying these are the requirements for data for identity hubs. You must support syncing data between instances and serialization to help minimize risk of lock-in. So operations are modeled as commits. So it's a lot like a Git commit you can think of, but Daniel points out that it's strategy agnostic. So you can implement commits in different ways. Identity hubs use a notion of collections for search and indexing. So that's sort of my informal feel of it. I should have worked up a better example, but like sort of grouping your music or within that certain types of music to support search operations, iterating through results through the API. It uses the SSI stack. Hopefully this is going to be true for many of these solutions. So DDoS for authentication, Universal Resolver. They have an API format that I won't get into, but the last things I wanted to call out have to do with authentication and authorization. So at first I thought that identity hubs are ACL-based, but it turns out it's a hybrid ACL OCAP model. And so Daniel gave me the link to this paper called Capability-Based Access Control. And I'm going to include the link to that here. So I hadn't really caught up much on that yet, but I encourage you to take a look at that. I think that sounds interesting. And then a hub request is, the format is JWE. So this is a very quick, bullet point description. We are almost through we just have a secure data hubs and agents quick overview to get through, and then we'll get to the Q&A. So for secure data hubs, I'm on slide 11. So yes, definitely focus on storage as well. The storage is always encrypted in transit and at rest. So again, secure data hubs, this is the proposal that Digital Bazaar sent out about a month ago. So it relies on structured data and metadata. Sort of think of it as the structured data and metadata, but then for large files, you can have streams. So you have structured data and metadata to point to the streams in the case that you have large data blobs. So let's see, authorization method agnostic. I need to understand that a bit more. This one has edits from Manny, so hopefully we can get this in the Q&A. There's an encrypted search scheme described. And the API just listed a quick set of operations. So there's API supporting service endpoint discovery, CRUD operations on data hubs, document streams, encrypted indexes, And then query and search of encrypted documents. So that's something that my personal thought, very naively, is that that maybe seems out of scope for like sort of a base level thing that a base level kind of standard that one would choose to tackle. But it does sound like a very interesting concept, and it would be interesting to compare how different people do it. So data formats. So today, JSON, future CBOR, JWE today, CWE in the future. And lastly, I feel like I did agents the least amount of justice, but the best way that I thought to introduce it was just to talk about its responsibilities and then give examples of things. So you can think of it as a fiduciary on behalf of an identity owner. So, and that may be an IoT device, a pet, and so it holds cryptographic keys that uniquely embody its delegated authorization. And it interacts using interoperable DIGCOM protocol. So the examples that I took from one of the papers I thought were really good examples is a mobile app that ALF uses to manage credentials and connect to others. So that would be an agent for Alice. A cloud-based service that Alice uses to expose a stable endpoint where other agents can talk to her, also an agent for Alice. A server run by Faber College, allowing it to issue credentials to its student, is an agent for Faber. The interesting thing that, just to refer quickly back to slide 7, Maybe this slide makes a little more sense now. Again, this is the one from the Agents Hub's work that the Daniels and Sam kicked off. I think that thinking about, you know, sort of the data-oriented versus the action-oriented, I think that makes a lot of sense, and that's one reason I think that everyone seems to agree that, yeah, there seems to be this clear set of things that agents are doing that we can call out. There's this clear set of other things that we're still working through, you know, like certainly within storage and, you know, at some layer search within the storage, things like that. But then that's the one where we have kind of two approaches out. So I'm getting to the QA and discussion, but I wanted to set up some straw man arguments that are not real solutions. So with that Venn diagram in mind, extreme proposals would be, okay, so agents do actions and they need storage. So straw man one would be, identity hubs, secure data hubs are storage techniques. They expose different APIs. Straw man two is that, you know, some kind of relationship, like one is more fundamental than the other, like one is lower level, for example. I personally think that neither is the real answer, because I think that a lot of what we need to do is teasing apart the goals and responsibilities, of each approach. And I'm going to skip the rest of my discussion points on slide 14 and jump back to the queue. I think that Daniel was next. Okay, Daniel, you're up.
I was originally on the queue because I was just saying that Microsoft, you know, we're working on not something that's just like we're trying to put such a standard, but it's called Enterprise Agent, which has the keys of some organization and, you know, can sign some things in response to certain flows. So it's very agent-like, and we've looked at Aries as, you know, potentially like converging that as well. On the hub stuff, I guess I would say that one thing to highlight, and I think this is the only piece of not contention, but not full agreement yet between like hubs and agents, is that hubs describe this interface called actions, and actions is a generic means for task-oriented flows where you could say one might be claims-based. I want to request a claim, and then there's an issuance, or there's a denial, or whatever that is, and it's just based on typed objects. But kind of we recognized at the onset that lots of different task-based flows follow the same paradigm of I initiate something, I ID that task initiation, and then I build essentially a line of activity on it that is eventually closed out. So it generalizes that process so that you're not building like, you know, a bunch of different protocols for every, like, how do you get tickets to an event? How do you, you know, sign up for a class? Like, that sort of thing. It generalizes the basis of that so that you could handle the differences between those things more as typed object structures than that's. So that's one thing I would say.
Excellent. Thank you. Joe, you're up. And you're probably muted.
Sorry, I'm just trying to be polite. I just want to throw HoloChain into the mix, not to talk about it today, but to try and figure out how it fits into this conversation. And then we actually have not sent out the formal call for review of that DID spec. So I'm going to do that today, but there were some questions. I wanted to, Manu, if you could follow up with that. There was an email, Marcus, there were some validator failures.
Okay. I think we're fine, but I will look at that. I guess I'll have to do it today. Yes.
Okay. I got the email ready to go. I just want to make sure we're all right.
Okay.
Thanks, Joe. Daniel Hardman.
I don't think my comment's relevant anymore. Keep going.
Okay. Add yourself back if you have something. And Manu, you're up.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we may be missing is kind of the use cases that led to, you know, the designs that we currently have. Like, for example, for secure data hubs, it's very much driven from the, you know, okay, I've got a digital wallet, and I've got all these credentials, and some of them may contain some personally identifiable information, or it's just, you know, I have these things that I feel, because I'm, you know, this is a self-sovereign community, I feel are mine, and I don't want anyone to be able to take them away from me. So the Secure Data Hub spec kind of came from a, okay, so I don't want my storage provider to be able to snoop on any of the content in my digital wallet. So how do I store it in a way that they can't snoop? And I also don't want to be locked into my storage provider. Like, I want to be able to move my wallet at any point, and I don't want somebody to stand in the way of doing that. So a lot of the feature, and then of course the third thing was, you know, we're trying, we on purpose looked at identity hubs and solid pods and some of the things happening in the community and said, okay, what's the minimal thing that we can build? What's the minimal set of features that these other communities could use to build their stuff on top, right? So that's why, you know, for example, you had pointed out, well, you know, we had said that the authorization mechanisms for secure data hubs, that secure data hubs are agnostic to the authorization method. It's because, you know, we're not picking. People can use OAuth to authorize, they can use Zcaps to authorize, they can use ACLs to authorize, and the reason we did that is because many of these projects have different authorization mechanisms. And then there are, of course, other features like the encrypted query and search that we think you have to have. If you don't have that, then all of a sudden, the server, which is your storage provider, needs to be able to peek into your data. And that's one of the things where we said that's a super slippery slope, because the second they start peeking into your data, all of a sudden they're touching your personally identifiable information. They can start potentially reselling that information. And it's, you know, it's the whole surveillance capitalism thing that we wanted to avoid. So again, I mean, the secure data hub stuff, you can think of it's just like an encrypted Dropbox, right? So we share files with each other all the time. It's meant to basically support that, but also be a building block for solid pods and identity hubs and these other mechanisms, using a privacy first design philosophy. And that's it.
And we're at time. I'm going to end with Daniel, though, who will have some comments on that, I'm sure.
So, Daniel. Sorry. Hey, my question was, I was trying to get unmuted. when we talk about these low-level things, you know, the way that hubs approach like search querying is that there's a metadata section that doesn't have to be encrypted. And the reason we went that way instead of like full encrypted search over the encrypted portion of the payload versus like exposure of some small pieces of data is that as you look at methods for doing this, homomorphic encryption and other indice methods, it's just incredibly expensive. Totally works as like a one-off server that you run if you're a hobbyist and have money to throw at that. I'm curious if that is something that folks have looked at. Like, is there any eye to like the cost of a large-scale implementer ever being able to really do that and getting it out to consumers who don't want to pay an arm and a leg?
Manu, you're up.
I think Kazuke is up.
Yeah, well, so I think I answered the question.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that was perfect. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Great.
Yes, so we spent a lot of time making sure that the design was compute efficient, and it is incredibly compute efficient. So we can go through that. We don't do any fancy, crazy crypto stuff. It's a much simpler mechanism, doesn't use homomorphic encryption, doesn't try and do computation over encrypted values, and we're happy to go into more of that in another call because we're out of time.
Great, yes. And we can do the follow-up session. And I think, well, because I'm chair, I'll reserve the right to get the last comment in, which is that I was reading all the specs trying to figure out if Secure Data Hubs was sort of serving that purpose of, you know, the sort of bare minimum part. And I had a lot of questions with making that happen. So that's where I think I got into a lot of the questions of the need to tease apart certain responsibilities. So I think we have a lot more work to do there, but I think this conversation is a really good starter to get us all on the same page and start talking so we can all look more deeply into it and go from there. Thanks a lot. Thanks to everyone for supporting this comparison.
Thanks all. Bye.
Take care.